Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is May 19th, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Chase the Dragon and Naloxone. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Richard Hamilton. He is the chair of the Department of Emergency Medicine at Drexel University College of Medicine. He is also the host of EM Talkscast and recently gave a talk at the Association of Academic Chairs of Emergency Medicine annual retreat called Can Social Media Save Emergency Medicine? Welcome to the SGM, Richard.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, and you're going to have to tell people, how did we end up getting connected on this?
Well, so a couple of years ago, I was feeling a little bit, in the doldrums with my teaching and teaching style. And I went up to New York and took the teaching course. And I met a physician who was dressed like Batman.
I wonder who that, don't give away a secret identity.
Okay. And that physician has a great podcast, a skeptical podcast, and, you know, had a good time connecting and then became a listener of your podcast. But then when I put together this talk for social media, which has become a big part of my teaching and whatnot, FOMED, et cetera, I reached back to you and wanted to hear about what you thought social media was doing for knowledge translation.
And we'll put a link up to that talk that you gave, and you got some help from someone else. Who was that?
Kay Moody helped me as well. Kay is the mastermind, the diabolical mastermind, the wonderful diabolical mastermind behind EM Doc's Facebook page, which has an unbelievably fast-growing number of followers. And from what I hear, with certain folks, it's the first thing people check in the morning when they wake up to see.
Well, I checked this morning and it has 13,000 plus followers now or people in the community. So I think she's doing a wonderful job helping with us talk to each other. Now, exactly. You connected with me and wanted to talk a little bit about naloxone. It's something that had bugged you ever since residency, I think you said.
Yeah. So, you know, I did my fellowship in New York City. We saw a fair amount of heroin and a fair amount of heroin mixed with just about everything else. And we always had this almost axiomatic approach to say that you had to observe a heroin overdose for a long period of time because of concerns about delayed pulmonary edema and all sorts of things when the naloxone wore off. And then over the years of practice, of course, I observed that, in fact, mostly we don't do that. And at first, with a little trepidation, I wondered whether that was going to be a problem. And then over time, I saw very little problems with some caveats. And we'll talk about those caveats when we go over this paper.
All right. Well, why don't we jump into today's episode and give us a case?
So this is a great case, a pretty typical one for my practice. A 45-year-old male arrives via EMS complaining of, I want to be discharged. EMS says they found him unresponsive with paraphernalia consistent with IV heroin use. His pre-vital hospital signs are a pulse ox of 89% and a respiratory rate of 6 prior to being given a milligram of naloxone and some oxygen. And then after the naloxone, of course, he's alert and oriented times 3. He has a normal pulse ox. His lung fields sound clear. He gets there roughly 20 minutes later, and he says, I'm fine. I want to go home.
Well, heroin use has been increasing in the U.S. since 2007, and opioids depress the heart rate and breathing, and an overdose can even result in death. With the increase in heroin use, there's also been an increase in the number of heroin deaths.
Yeah, naloxone is the specific treatment for heroin overdoses, and it is becoming more and more available. Not only first responders, you know, police, fire, but also lay people and trained bystanders. And there's even talk of sort of naloxone being the new AED that sits in a public place for folks to use when they see someone with a heroin or opioid overdose. It's a opioid antagonist. It binds competitively to opioid receptors in the CNS and the GI tract. And it can be administered in multiple ways, intranasal, sub-Q, IM, IV, even nebulized or even down the endotracheal tube.
Well, the American Heart Association discussed opioid overdoses and the use of naloxone in Part 10, Special Circumstances of Resuscitation, in their 2015 guidelines. And there were two new recommendations.
That's right. One was about education and the naloxone training and distribution. And the second new recommendation was about opioid overdose treatment.
Well, Canadian EM summarized the top five changes to the AHA guidelines in a series of infographics, and they are fantastic, by the way. And one infographic focused in on special circumstances, and they said, quote, trained providers should administer naloxone to respiratory arrest patients with suspected opioid overdose. Lay people likely to see opioid overdoses may be trained to administer naloxone during targeted BLS training.
Yeah, some heroin users may refuse further treatment or transport to the emergency department after receiving that naloxone in the field and waking up. If transported to the hospital, they may also refuse further treatment or observation in the emergency department, much like our patient is doing right now.
And so this is a bit different than some of the other podcasts we've done, because we have three clinical questions that this paper tries to answer. So what's the first question?
Well, the first one is, what are the medical risks to a heroin user treated with naloxone who refuses transport to the emergency department?
And the second question was, when a heroin user is treated in the emergency department with naloxone, how long must they be observed before discharging?
Number three question was, how effective is naloxone administration in heroin users by first responders and bystanders, and what are the risks associated with naloxone distribution programs?
All right, so what reference do you have, Richard, to go through this?
Well, it's Willman et al. It's from Clinical Tox in 2017, and it's, do heroin overdose patients require observation after receiving naloxone?
And I want to give a shout out to Evan Schwartz. He's a little bit nervous about what we might say, so hi, Evan.
All right. Cheers, Evan.
Let's go through the PICO. What was the population?
So the population is patients suspected of a heroin overdose.
And the intervention?
It's naloxone administration by first responders or bystanders, transportation to hospital, observation, and naloxone distribution programs.
And they really don't have a comparison. I mean, it doesn't really apply to the PICO format in this case. But what were they looking for outcomes when they did this paper?
They wanted to look at the risk to the heroin user treated with naloxone not transported to the emergency department, the so-called patient who gets naloxone in the field and then takes off.
And then trying to answer, you know, how long do we observe these people in the emergency department?
And then the third thing was the effectiveness of naloxone administration in heroin users by first responders and bystanders, and the risk of naloxone distribution programs.
All right. We have a quality checklist for therapeutic systematic reviews. And so we're going to run through those seven questions. And the first question, Richard, is the clinical question is sensible and answerable.
That's a definite yes.
How about the search for the studies? Was it detailed and exhaustive?
I'm going to have to say no.
And how about the primary studies? Were they of high methodological quality?
Really, we can't be sure about that one.
And the assessment of the studies, were they reproducible?
That would be hard to do. I'm going to give that an unsure.
All right. The outcomes, were they clinically relevant?
They were, yes.
Was there low statistical heterogeneity for the primary outcomes?
That also gets an unsure.
And the seventh question, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
That also gets an unsure.
So we're going to go through those unsures when we talk a little nerdy. Let's instead of going through the results, what we'll do is we'll go through question one, two, and three. We'll give the author's conclusions for each of those, the results, and then we'll go through that nerdy section. So what was the first question again?
What are the medical risks to a heroin user treated with naloxone who refuses transport to the emergency department?
So the author's conclusions were, quote, patients revived with naloxone after heroin overdose may be safely released without transport if they have normal mentation and vital signs. In the absence of co-intoxicants and further opioid use, there is very low risk of death from rebound opioid toxicity. All right, what are their key results?
Well, seven studies were relevant to answering the first question. There are 5,443 patients treated with naloxone and not transported to the emergency department. Only two of the studies exclusively looked at heroin. That's about 1,000 patients, and there were no deaths.
All right. What about question number two then?
So question two, when a heroin user is treated in the emergency department with naloxone, how long must they be observed before discharging?
All right. The author's conclusions. For patients treated in the ED for opioid overdose, an observation period of 1 hour is sufficient if they ambulate as usual, have normal vital signs, and a Glasgow coma scale of 15. All right. What did they base this on?
Well, there were five studies that were considered relevant to answer the second question, and observation period recommendations appear to be anywhere from 4 to 6 hours to even up to 24.
And a retrospective chart review by Smith et al. Included 124 patients presenting to the emergency department following a heroin overdose. There were 46 patients discharged home, 42 patients left against medical advice, and 19 patients eloped from the emergency department. No patients were transported back to the emergency department or were found dead within 6 days. Most patients left the emergency department within 2 hours. The other studies showed similar results.
Yeah, a clinical prediction rule was developed by Christensen et al. To identify patients who could be safely discharged 1 hour after naloxone administration. The rule consisted of three variables: ability to mobilize as usual, meaning walk around, normal vital signs, and a GCS of 15. They had 573 patients included in the study. The rule had a sensitivity of 99% with a 95% confidence interval from 96 to 100 and a specificity of 40%. 95% CI was 36 to 45% for predicting adverse events within 24 hours. The rule required validation before it can be really recommended for use.
All right, let's move on to the third and final question.
How effective is naloxone administration in heroin users by first responders and bystanders, and what are the risks associated with naloxone distribution programs?
Okay, and for the third question, the authors concluded, quote, patients suffering opioid toxicity can be administered naloxone safely by first responders and trained lay people. Programs that train these individuals are likely safe and beneficial. However, further research is necessary. And for the key results this time, they had 15 studies that were considered relevant to answer this third question.
EMS personnel and emergency physicians are already really using a common sense approach to the patient with heroin overdose who is revived with naloxone. This literature review appears to support that complications from opioid rebound toxicity are rare and that patients who have returned to normal, for example, as per the Christensen study, may be discharged or released.
All right, Richard, it's time to talk nerdy, and we're going to go through my favorite part. We're going to go through 5 points, and you're going to kick it off with the first one.
Okay, so the search. Well, the search for relevant articles was not detailed and exhaustive. They only searched two databases, PubMed and Google Scholar, and also limited to the English language. They did not mention speaking to experts in the field or searching the gray literature.
The second issue was the methodological quality, and we're really unsure about the quality of the included studies. They did not do a formal rating of individual studies using an assessment tool to characterize the quality of the studies.
That's very true, and the level of evidence in the included studies was mostly retrospective chart reviews and other observational studies. That puts them on a low level of evidence on the evidence-based medicine pyramid.
And the fourth thing was the precision of the results. And due to the level of evidence and missing data, we're really unsure about how precise the results are in this review.
Right. So the fifth and final is predating fentanyl adulteration. So this issue became a very important one after the study was released. Most of the studies included in the review predate heroin adulterated with fentanyl and other similar drugs. As my good friend Leon Gusso says, there's no such thing as just plain heroin anymore. So what does this mean for the study? In general, heroin mixed with fentanyl requires larger doses of naloxone to reverse, and patients will have, for example, difficult to treat respiratory depression. Therefore, this group will be clinically evident to most providers. Can we apply these findings to our new era of heroin-laced fentanyl and carfentanyl and every other thing? Unsure, but as an educated guess, a well-appearing patient revived with naloxone is still probably okay to discharge.
All right, let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions. And in general, we agree with the author's conclusions.
Yes. However, when we podcasted on this at emtoxcast.com, we were very careful to point out one specific subtlety. Opioid overdoses may have respiratory depression and hypoxia when not stimulated, but when stimulated might meet all of the criteria from the Christensen study. It is important not to stimulate the patient when you're making your assessment as to whether they can be discharged. Once you observe a lack of respiratory depression or desaturation on the pulse oximeter, then perform a careful pulmonary auscultation so as to not to overlook rales from pulmonary edema and observe that they are able to ambulate unassisted. This represents the heroin overdose. Revive with naloxone that may be discharged.
There was a letter to the editor expressing some concerns, and the authors did respond to that in a publication, and so we will put up links to those two things in the show notes. All right, how about a bottom line then?
So the bottom line, Ken, is that delayed opioid toxicity is more likely, in my opinion, overlooked opioid toxicity rather than really rebound toxicity. There are patients that are safe to discharge, but really you need to perform a careful clinical exam and be certain to observe the patient's respiratory pattern and mental status in a non-stimulated state. Of course, exercise caution in the ever-changing world of heroin abuse and all of its adulterants.
All right, how about a case resolution then?
So in this case, when observed from the entrance to the room without stimulation, it was obvious that when not stimulated, the patient's respiratory rate would decrease and the oxygen saturation would dip to 90%. Rather than administering additional naloxone, you apply supplemental oxygen and allow the patient to sleep for another hour. At that time, you remove the oxygen and recheck the patient without overly stimulating him. He appears to be alert and oriented times three. He has clear lung fields, no signs of respiratory depression, and can walk to the bathroom on his own and back without assistance. This patient appears safe for discharge and referral to addiction counseling and treatment.
All right, so how are you going to take this information then and apply it clinically?
Well, the results of this study really do provide only weak evidence, but they are applicable to EMS determining refusal of transport decisions after heroin overdoses and ED physicians who have to assess patients brought into the ED after heroin overdoses given naloxone, and also what to do with patients who've been treated with naloxone in the naloxone distribution programs used by bystanders or lay people.
All right, so what are you going to actually say at the patient's bedside when they are getting up and wanting to leave?
Well, it's a speech I've given many times, and it goes something like, you've just had a heroin overdose, and you feel better because we gave you a drug to block the effects. If you feel like you are getting worse, you should return immediately, preferably go home or be with someone that can observe you for a period of time. If you'd like to be referred to a detox program or perhaps even get a prescription for naloxone to take home, we can start talking about that as well.
Well, it's time for the Keener contest, and last week's winner was Christopher White. He is training to be an advanced nurse practitioner. Christopher knew that Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was the guru followed by the Beatles, and they could probably pronounce his name much better than I could. Richard, what's the question this week?
All right, so the Keener question is, what is chasing the dragon, and what medical condition does it cause?
If you know the answer to this week's Keener question, then send an email to thesjam@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there are some other FOMED resources out there, and I will list them in the show notes. But Richard, I wanted to thank you for being a great guest skeptic.
Thanks, Ken. It was great to be on the show.
And if you could give us the tagline.
Okay, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.